PlaceToBeNation.com. What is up? This is Chad Campbell with another Pod Blast. Today I'm going to be talking about CWF Mid-Atlantic Worldwide episode number 109, which was the latest episode that dropped on Wednesday. Let me give just kind of a minute, I guess, pitch about CWF Mid-Atlantic. If there's anyone listening that's never checked these guys out, they are an independent group based out of Gibsonville, North Carolina. They run most of their major shows in their own sportatorium-type building, which is a really cool building that is akin to the Techwood Studios in Atlanta from the old 1980s NWA tapings, with the flags of the different countries hanging from the rafters and so forth. All of their shows are on YouTube, 100% absolutely free. They put their whole shows together into worldwide episodes. The worldwide episodes drop every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. And, you know, just perusing the comments that I see at PlaceToBeNation.com and on the live groups and Facebook chats, I know there's a lot of people disgruntled, kind of, with WWE from time to time. And sitting through a three-hour-long Raw is not that appealing to a lot of fans. And if you're in that boat, I would welcome giving CWF Mid-Atlantic a try. I don't think the promotion is quite for everyone, but of all the promotions, I think they've done the best job in creating an old school vibe with very logical booking, but also it doesn't feel like it's dated. The moves are modern. They have a champion right now in Trevor Lee, who is doing a, you know, Ric Flair NWA touring world champion gimmick, and he's the, by far in my mind right now, the best champion in wrestling. That includes Kazuchika Okada. So he's on a year long reign as I record this. Tons of great matches to go back through the archives. So yeah, I would just give CWF a shot if you're interested, and I think you'll know pretty quickly whether it's a promotion for you or not. So now, CWF Mid-Atlantic in 2016 was by far my promotion of the year in the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards. 2017, I think, has also been a strong year so far. I do think it's been slightly less than 2016. One reason for that is they've kind of relied, in my opinion, just a bit too much on sort of gimmick shows and different type of shows. They are recently coming off a couple of worldwide episodes that were based around Battle Bowl, which is something they generally do every year in the promotion. It's not generally my favorite concept. They also had a Cornetto Brothers tag tournament in March, and while the worldwide episodes we got of the Cornetto Brothers tournament were excellent, they had a fan fest event on the afternoon of one of the Cornetto Brother night shows, and while that looked like a lot of fun live, they did make that a worldwide episode, and I didn't think it kind of projected into a really good episode for the viewer after the fact. In addition, the last minor critique is they had the Hardy Boys in January, which, of course, you know, with the Hardy Boys, the deleted gimmick, it's the hot indie thing, so no fault to them for booking the Hardy Boys. And we, you know, should mention promoter booker Brad Stutz, definitely friends with the Hardys, as you've seen his cameos on the TNA Impact segments. So they had the Hardy Boys in, they had a tag match, which was fine, but they also had an Apocalypto match, which quite frankly didn't quite work out for me. Now, having said all that, I thought this episode 109 of Worldwide, is a great jumping in point, and to me it was a return to form, because we saw four matches on this episode. All four kind of had a different theme. All four, some were closing a feud and beginning other feuds, and then some were leading up to their second biggest show generally of the year, which is Absolute Justice. It's kind of their bookend show in June. They have bookend shows in June, and then they have Battlecade in December, which is their biggest show of the year. So the show starts out with Cecil Scott, who is generally the color commentator for CWF Worldwide, and he's facing Kane Justice. Kane Justice has been in the business for about a year now. He started out as a referee. He's just been wrestling for about a year. He's the current Rising Generation League champion for the promotion. And to me, he's kind of one of those blue chip prospects in my eyes. He has a unique look. I can see the look being a little off-putting to some, but I think the way he conveys himself helps get over his look overall. He has great submissions, does kind of an MMA-type gimmick, utilizing a lot of submission work, a lot of groundwork, but he's also a cocky prick that really he's able to convey over the TV set, and you get a feeling that you just want to punch the guy in the mouth. Now, this feud with Cecil Scott's been building for a good long while, where he's been picking at Cecil on commentary. They've had a lot of interactions. This is kind of the blow-off to their feud. Cecil Scott was a wrestler for about 10 to 12 years. Now is, like I said, mainly in the color commentary world. He wrestles every once in a while. And I think you saw that play out in this match, where it was a decent match. I had it about 2.5 stars, but it was more kind of about the story than the actual work within. You know, Cecil not being a regular worker anymore is understandably going to be kind of rusty, and Kane is still a very young worker. So, you know, if you see a couple of green spots from him, I don't think that's any fault for him. Beyond that, I think they, again, were able to get over the story of the match, and Kane locked in his arm submission, which is a great submission in wrestling right now, where it's being treated as instant death, and anybody that's locked in that submission taps immediately. So that was a good bookend to that storyline. But the interesting part was the story kind of continued after the match, as Mitch Connor, who's a long mainstay veteran in CWF, was on color commentary for this match with Cecil Wrestling. And after the match, Kane gets in Mitch Connor's face. Kind of does the same poke in the bear type routine with Mitch that he had done with Cecil. So it looks like that's the feud going forward. Of course, they have a little bit of interaction later on in the show that we'll get to. But yeah, it seems like we transitioned from the Cecil Scott feud versus Kane Justice to now the Mitch Connor feud versus Kane Justice. So another good angle advancement when one door closes, one door opens. The next match we saw was Kevin Koo and Donnie Dollars versus the Carnies. The Carnies, if you're on wrestling Twitter and you follow our good friend Dylan Hells, you know he's friends with the Carnies. He pushes the Carnies. So in this kind of age of analysis and media, wrestling media that we have, it can seem kind of like, oh, well, if I praise the Carnies, it just I can sound like I'm just a Dylan follower, or I'm just, you know, following what the cool kids are saying about a certain worker group. Now, having said all that, I do believe the Carnies are one of your better consistent tag teams on the independent scene in the U.S. I don't know if I would say they're a traditionally great, in quote-unquote, tag team, but they have a really strong ability to go into any promotion to get their gimmick over, which on the surface can seem a bit goofy, with Nick Iggy as kind of your ringmaster, ring barker type character, and Kerry Awful as the demonic monster kind of behind the act. So that can seem a little goofy on the surface, but they're able to really convey that, work with a wide variety of teams, and have good to very good matches that you can just place in and not have to worry about it, and help fill out a show that way. So in this match kind of plays to that lineage to a T. The storyline of this match was Donnie Dollars, who's again another longtime veteran of the promotion, was a little miffed that he was teaming with Kevin Koo, somebody that he'd never heard of, that he hadn't interacted with, and they sort of paired them together. Now, Kevin Koo is also somebody I was not that familiar with. I did a little research, found out he was a New England guy trained by Brian Fury. I'm not sure if I've ever seen him before, but he impressed me in this match. I thought he was very strong as kind of your plucky underneath babyface character. And I just thought the Carnies worked really well as a tag team. They isolated Koo for most of the match where he's facing peril, but Koo and Nick Gigi in particular had some really good chop exchanges. And there's just a few kind of double team type moves that the Carnies do. Basic psychology and cutting the ring off. It seems simple on the surface, but it's honestly something you just do not see that much in independent tag wrestling, where there's less emphasis on making tags, isolating an opponent, and so forth. So this was a welcome tag match that also had a little bit of angle advancement as the Carnies are getting a decent push and becoming pretty regular mainstays within CWF. So they up their kind of claim for a shot at the tag titles again against the Sandwich Squad. They've had a couple of interactions. I would be remiss, the Dawsons have won the tag titles, which happened on last week's episode, ending Sandwich Squad's long reign. But so they're kind of getting in that tag title scene mix again. And you had Donnie Dollars being annoyed that he was teamed with Kevin Koo and attacking him after the match. So that can set up something in the future as well. So as you can see, just in these first two matches, you have decent to good in-ring action. I went 3 stars on the tag match, by the way. So you have decent to good in-ring action, but you also have storyline development, and there's always something for the future. Then we had Eric Andrews, who is kind of doing a scuzzy Bray Wyatt-esque gimmick, I guess, for a better term. He's not like the Eater of Followers or whatever. It's not that supernatural. But he's kind of a guy you could see, living in a trailer park that's trying to hustle on Craigslist or something like that. He's the current TV champion, and his whole gimmick has been, he's been very opportunistic, where he's either ran out the time limit because the TV title matches have a 10-minute time limit. So he's ran out the time limit, or as what happened in this case, where they do a fan drawing usually for his opponent, and tonight it was Mitch Connor. So Mitch Connor comes out still wearing his commentator clothes. He comes out from the commentation booth, and he gets attacked immediately by Kane Justice. So again, this is another opportunity for Eric Andrews to pounce. Eric Andrews ends up winning the match in about a minute because Kane Justice had just annihilated Mitch Connor. There was a tiny bit of interaction between Kane and Eric that I thought was interesting, where Kane grabbed the belt, the TV title, and Eric yelled it out to Kane from inside the ring, like, hey, don't mess with my belt. And that I thought was, it may have just been a throwaway line, a little throwaway bit, but it could have set up something for the future. And at the very least, it gets over Eric Andrews' character, because he's a heel, but he's also a heel that really doesn't want any other heel friends. He's just a loner dude that thinks he's the shit, that has this TV title, that he's really escaping by the smallest of margins and hanging on to that belt. Really engaging title run so far. Then we get to our main event, which is Nick Richards versus Brad Attitude. And I thought this match was great. I gave it 4 stars. Brad Attitude returned at Absolute Justice last year, right after the Trevor Lee Andrew Everett match, which I think is still the best match in CWF history. 4.75 stars, an amazing, amazing, amazing match. Finished in my top 10 matches worldwide of 2016. Brad Attitude returned at the end of that match, turned heel, smashed a beer bottle over Trevor Lee's head, and has just been an engaging, engrossing, mostly promo character within the promotion throughout. Even in the beginning of this worldwide episode, you see Attitude cut a promo, interject himself into the main event. This match carried the stipulation that the winner would face Trevor Lee at Absolute Justice. So that's a nice added little wrinkle. And they really just kind of went after each other. Let me talk a little bit about Nick Richards, because Nick Richards, I'm sure if you're not familiar with CWF, you're someone that is unfamiliar with Nick Richards, because he doesn't really travel much at all outside of the promotion. And if you know me as a wrestling fan, you should know that one of my favorite promotions of all time is IWA Mid-South, especially in the early 2000s. And in 2003, Chris Hero or Cassius Ohno had a very fun title reign. Once he beat CM Punk in the 93-minute match in February, he went on to defeat Stand Up, who was Trevor Murdoch in WWE. He defeated Raven. He defeated Ace Steel. He defeated BJ Whitmer. He just went through all of these kind of bigger indie star names and was defeating them one by one. Nigel McGuinness, he had a match with and defeated him one by one by one. Then he got set up with a match with Mark Wolfe, who was a mainstay in IWA Mid-South and in a lot of ways kind of the heart of the promotion. And that match happened on June 7th, 2003, which I can still remember the date, which is crazy without even looking at it. I can just recall that. And they were friends. They were both faces. And I thought they had a great match. And in the end, Mark Wolfe defeated Chris Hero for the IWA Mid-South title. And if you were just an internet fan at the time that kind of perused and glossed over everything, that could seem kind of odd, because certainly in 2003, Chris Hero had a lot more buzz than Mark Wolfe. But if you were watching the promotion, it made a ton of sense. It was a great match. It told a great story. Unfortunately, this was right around the time Mark Wolfe's body started betraying him. He had to kind of resign from the title. He had to forfeit the title based on injury, which was a shame. So the reason I go through that long story is to tell you that I think Nick Richards and Trevor Lee are almost direct parallels to what Chris Hero and Mark Wolfe were going into that match in 2003. Nick Richards has a long history in CWF. He's been a heel for predominantly most of his run, really just been a face in the promotion the last year and a half or so. He had a really good feud with Kamikaze Kid last year, won the Johnny Weaver Memorial Cup with an excellent match versus Eric Royal in the final. And then he's in a lot of ways the heart of the promotion in my mind. He gets a lot of fan support. He's an engaging character where, and this is all brought out if you watch this match, where on the commentary they did a fantastic job of building out this story, because he won the Weaver Cup right to challenge for the title shot in August. It's now June when he's cashing it in. So they talk about how he's, you know, held on to it. Does he doubt himself? Sort of that self-confidence. In addition, Nick Richards is mainly seen as a brawling type wrestler, but now he's kind of went technical in some ways. He still resorts to his brawling techniques in some ways. He's just sort of put it all together is the story that's being told. He's defeated a lot of former CWF champions, Eric Royal, Roy Wilkins, and now he can add Brad Attitude to this list, because he defeated Brad Attitude in about 18 minutes. Again, the arm work by Attitude I thought was fantastic. Selling by Richards was great. You can listen to the crowd get progressively more invested into this match as it goes on and on and on. It really builds. There's some brilliant cutoff spots at the very end where Richards is going for his cutter. He hits his cutter, but his arm's too injured. And then you even have a little bit of a callback to the Battlecade match where Robbie Walsh, the head referee for CWF, who's on color commentary for this match with Mitch Connor incapacitated, gets into the ring, steals a chair from Brad Attitude. They've had a little bit of a long-going feud against each other. So everything built with a flash finish, but also a finish that worked for me, where Attitude goes for a moonsault. Richards is able to hit him with the cutter in midair from the moonsault. I thought it looked pretty impressive, just in real time, really fast. He gets the pin, and now our main event for Absolute Justice is set with Nick Richards versus Trevor Lee. And starting last year, I kind of started sprinkling in that I thought Richards was the guy that was going to beat Trevor Lee. I started formulating that opinion, and I'm sticking to my guns. And so my official prediction, which the match happens in real time on Saturday night, is when the Absolute Justice card happens, but we won't see it on Worldwide for 4 weeks from this past Wednesday. So I'm going to try to stay spoiler free, fingers crossed. But my official prediction right now is we will have a new CWF Mid-Atlantic Champion, Nick Richards. And if you follow the promotion, it'll be a great story that's been told. So that's it for me today. Sorry, a little bit longer. I didn't think it'd be that long of an episode. But I hope I was able to convey the passion I have for the promotion through this pod blast, because I really love the promotion overall. I want everybody to at least give them a chance one time. I mean, it's an hour-long show on YouTube. Just give them a shot. If you don't like it, if it's not for you, that's cool. But I think a lot of people would be, and it's a really engaging promotion to watch and to follow. So this is Chad Campbell signing off.